Hey there, we are joined today. I'm so excited about this because Michael Leibowitz is a regular on the show. He has been now for, it must be pushing 6 months. He's a prisoner in the state system. We started having him on because of the book that he wrote with his cellmate, Down the Rabbit Hole, How the Culture of Corrections Encourages Crime. But Michael's usually on during our after six portion of the program, and once before we put him on at the beginning of the show. And we're doing it again today just because I want to make sure everybody gets to hear him. He's a smart guy. He spent 22 years in the prison system. So he is proof of how spending time in a Connecticut state prison makes you smart, analytical, and fascinating. So, Michael, welcome.
Hey, Todd, I just want to make sure you can hear me okay because you sound a little muffled. I mean, I can understand you. I just want to make sure that I'm coming through clear.
You sound wonderful. Have no concern about that. Producer Mike takes care of all the technical things.
All right.
You need not worry about anything. So let's send people to your website. You've got a one of those web pages where you can accept donations, and the purpose of this is if somebody wants to give you a few bucks to help out with the cost of doing your phone calls to us and things like that, they can do that.
Yeah, that's the main thing, is because my friend Subby has been footing the bill for that and a lot of other things for me, and I'm feeling a little guilty about it, so I'm trying to raise some money on my own so that I can continue to call without putting a burden on him.
Yes, which I'm sure we can do. I'm sure people, even if it's, you know, $1 or $5, a very small amount of money, I know that people like doing this kind of thing. So as people get to know you, they'll go to prisonermike.com, and that brings you to one of those fundraising websites for Michael Leibowitz, and you can give him a few bucks if you're interested, or just go there and read up on him. So we'll remind you again about that in case you don't want to do it yet because you want to listen to Michael a little bit, which would make sense. So we're going to talk about friendship today, right?
Absolutely.
Okay. What about friendship did you want to talk about?
Well, it's interesting because I'm going to tie together, I think, some things that a lot of people may not tie together, or maybe they would, but I was listening to a talk show the other day on the radio, and the guy, they were talking about mass shootings, and they were talking about how people that engage in that sort of behavior is that they feel unheard. They don't feel like they're being seen or heard by other people. And, you know, that's okay. Maybe that's part of it. I really don't know, but I thought it was interesting. And I often hear that one of the reasons that Donald Trump has garnered such, you know, so much support is that it's from a lot of people who haven't felt that their point of view has been heard, that they haven't been understood, and they feel that he represents them. And I think about how sometimes in here I feel very lonely because the people around me don't relate to me. They don't understand me. They don't communicate about the things that I want to communicate. And then I realized, well, I didn't just realize it, but I re-realized it, that that's sort of what friends do, is friends make a person, make me feel visible, make me feel understood, communicate with me, and that's a very, I think, valuable experience to have.
Well, you know, you started off talking about the mass shooters, I think, and the what they're talking about with them is a social isolation. People who throughout their lives feel inadequate, inappropriate, and unlikable, unlovable. And when that goes on for years and people form around it, and then they get into adolescence or their 20s, and that sense of isolation can grow and their minds can get captured by bad ideas. So how have you, without having lots of people to talk to, how have you avoided feeling frustrated or angry?
Well, I haven't avoided feeling frustrated or angry, but I will say that it's been moderated to a large extent by some of the friendships that I've been able to cultivate. And it's interesting because two of my friends, for instance, Subby, who I just mentioned about paying for the calls, and Brent, who was my cellie and we wrote the book together, are two very, very good friends of mine, and yet seemingly they're very different from one another. Subby is an extrovert. He loves talking to people, loves dealing with people. Brent is an introvert, not very sociable. Brent is serious, you know, pretty much all the time, and Subby's not. Subby's lighthearted. But what they each do for me is they provide me with that sort of visibility. Subby, when I talk to him, he's very compassionate towards me. He listens. He, you know, I known Subby since I was 14 years old, so he reminds me of my young self, how I used to be, you know, about the changes that I've made. And Brent, you know, Brent shares my basic values, my explicit philosophical outlook. And Brent also understands me, where something where not many people can, is about how difficult it's been to change, because he did it as well. And to have somebody understand me like that, it's very great. And without it, I often get very lonely. And, you know, in the past you've mentioned, and I've mentioned that a little over a year ago, Brent and I were separated due to the book that we wrote. And I felt very lonely because I've missed that. Because although Subby's my friend, Subby's not interested in the sort of things that Brent and I are interested in.
Yeah, so let me just put a little more emphasis on this. You lived for how many years with Brent?
We were cellmates for 11 years.
11 years you guys shared. You guys shared a little cage together for 11 years, and then you guys wrote this book, and suddenly Brent's gone. And when he gets moved to another prison like he did, how long ago was that?
That was June 4th, 2018.
Okay, so a year and a half ago almost. When that happens, how much contact do you then have with your best friend after he gets moved to another
cell? Zero. We're not allowed, per Department of Correction rules, to communicate with each other by any means. So I can't write to him. I can't do anything. So it's like a piece of me has been severed, basically.
Yeah. Okay, and Subby has been your friend, as you said, since you were 14. But he's like your external coordinator for any affair that has to do with outside of the prison. And that's a pretty big role, and which includes sharing money with you that he doesn't, you know, that I'm sure there are times that it's hard for him to do.
Well, yeah, it's very tough. He's going through a divorce right now, and, you know, that's tough for him. But he's just been there through so much for me. He was there for me when my mother died. When my father was in the hospital dying, Subby went and sat with him every day. He pays for these phone calls. He pays for me to call you. He pays for me to call him. He paid a significant amount of money toward my lawyer. And like you said, he makes calls for me. I mean, if it weren't for him, I would have never got contact with you. He's been there incredibly for me. And I also have my sister in my life, don't get me wrong, but neither of them are sort of interested in a lot of core things that I'm interested in.
Right.
And that's where you have come in, which has been a absolute delight to me, because what started off, you know, you had me on your show, which is also great because it allows me to get my point of view across and talk about what, you know, I care about. But along the way, we noticed that you and I had a lot in common as far as the things that we were interested in. So now, you know, we have become friends, and you remind me an awful lot of Brent, because Brent is, what's the word I'm looking for, blunt. Brent doesn't sugarcoat anything. He will tell you straight up what he thinks, straight up how he feels, and he expects the same in return. And you're a lot like that. So it's like I've got a piece of that sort of life back in me, and it's I'm very appreciative for it.
Well, that's good. I'm glad that I can play that role. You know, it's a fascinating thing how humans divide themselves up into these different groups, and then in certain relationships, like prisoners with the outside world, by definition, there's as much division as possible from the point of view of the people in charge of the prisons. But we're all human beings, and when you can connect with each other and find out what the similarities are, it's sometimes stunning that the similarities can be so much bigger than the things that separate us, while before we get to know each other, we tend to define each other by simplistic labels or categories and miss out on that whole other world of commonality.
Yeah, I think that's true. And, you know, a big thing, you know, I've had this discussion with Brent before when we were still cellmates, is it often became discouraging for us, you know, engaging in this change, becoming better people, and working so hard, because the rewards for it are few and far between. So how do I put it? So you're not reaping the benefits for all the hard work. So
what hard work are you referring to?
Well, to change one's character is incredibly difficult. And, I mean, it requires hours upon hours of reading, thinking, meditating, chastising oneself, taking criticism from people. thinking about, okay, what's right, what's wrong. It's by no means an easy task.
What was the character flaw? Since you use the word character, I just want to make sure we understand what you mean by that.
Well, at the root of it was I was a self-serving, I use self-serving loosely because I wasn't actually acting in my own interest, but I was a self-serving scumbag who didn't care how my behavior affected anybody else. If I thought it was going to benefit me, I was going to do it. If it meant stealing, I'd do it. If it meant robbing you, I would do it. If it meant beating you up, I'd do that too. And I just didn't care. I didn't care how it affected anybody else.
And that's how you grew up, and that's how you lived until you went to prison, and presumably for some time after going to prison. And you went into prison when you were 21, is that right?
Yes, I was 21 years old, and I came to prison. And for the first, I'd say, 7 years while I was in prison, I kind of waffled back and forth between I want to change and I don't want to change. I want to continue doing drugs. I want to continue in this sort of lifestyle. And after a while, I just got fed up with that, and I made a decision to change. And one of the rewards of that, and this is what I would tell Brent, was had we not changed,
you have 1 minute left,
we would never have been able to be friends like we were. And that was a reward in and of itself. And similarly, I wouldn't have the relationship with my sister. I wouldn't have my friendship with Subby where it is. I wouldn't have been able to become friends with you. Because, I mean, however many commonalities humans have, I seriously doubt if Todd Feinberg would have wanted to be friends with the guy that was robbing people and ripping people off on a regular basis.
Well, it would have been pretty interesting to have these phone conversations with that guy, too, but I suspect we wouldn't have connected. All right, Michael's going to call us back. You heard the voice come in and announce that his 15 minutes was up on this phone call, so he's got to reconnect. And we will take a little break and continue on WTIC News Talk 1080.
The caller has hung up.
WTIC, welcome back. Todd Feinberg with you. We're talking with Michael Leibowitz. Michael Leibowitz, he's our regular guest who is a prisoner in the state's prison system. He is a wonderful guy and a smart guy and really interested in politics and political theory. So we have some really good conversations. But we're talking right now about friendship on WTIC. Just a reminder, if you're interested in doing a little friendship thing with Michael and offering him a little financial support, you can drop him a few bucks at his website. Go to prisonermike.com, prisonermike.com. Okay, Michael, pick it back up.
Okay, so, well, I was saying that one of the rewards of altering my conduct, of changing my character, has been the friendships that I've been able to develop. But when I hung up and I was calling back, I actually thought about something else. And that is, not only is it a reward to have these relationships, but it's also a motivator to stay on the right track. Because if I were ever to go back into living the type of life that I was living, I would be letting, I feel, so many people down. I mean, I've got my sister, I've got Subby, I've got Brent, I now have you, you know, Len Susio, who put me in touch with you to begin with. So I would feel like I was just letting these people down, letting all of you down so much. So it's a heck of a motivator to stay on the straight and narrow.
So you require a motivator?
Oh, I think all human beings require a motivator. I mean, we don't act for nothing. If there was no motivation, we'd just sit still.
Yes, so but most of us don't have to think about not going back into a life of crime. And my sense of you is that your criminal past is foreign to who you are as a person, and that you've now escaped that artificial environment and you're in your normal world. But still, human psychologies have a way of making us long for that which was, even if it was something bad. And I'm curious if you feel something tugging at you that you have to resist, like the person who's trying to stick to a diet and the next thing you know, you're eating all those things that you just told yourself you weren't going to eat.
That's an excellent analogy, because it's exactly what I'm talking about. It's like an addiction to drugs or an addiction to food that, you know, it's not always there tugging at me. But there's times in here, you know, when somebody will say something to me or act a certain way towards me, when it's very, I don't want to say tempting, because I'm not actually tempted, but I can feel the urge inside me to react.
Do you mean to react like a prisoner instead of like a thoughtful human?
Yes. It's just because that would be in the immediate sense, it would be the easy way. You know, I could, quote-unquote, solve the problem with violence. But it doesn't actually solve the problem. It feels good in the immediate because you've been able to vent your anger and, you know, shut the guy up, but then in the long run, there's, you know, very negative consequences.
Oh, I think you would feel terrible within seconds.
Yeah, I think so, too.
Because when, you know, the analogy I use for this is you're standing at a landing on a staircase. You know, like you're going up a long flight of stairs, say, in a building, and there's just this regular landing, and you're at a landing, and you can decide, am I going to go back down, or am I going to keep going to higher ground? And those are really important decisions, those little junctures that we face all the time.
I like that example. I used to use an example when talking to another friend of mine, and I would tell him, you know, when it came time to make a difficult decision or to face something about himself that he didn't want to face, and I would say, you know, it's like you've got somebody chasing after you that's going to kill you, and the only way to get away is to go through fire. The fire is going to burn, but you're sure to die if you don't go through it. And that's sort of how I always look at it, that you just have to keep going. I have to keep pressing forward. What's the alternative? And I never want to return to that.
Yeah, I would think that you enjoy the person you are today much better than the thug you were 15 years ago, 20 years ago.
No doubt about it. I think that, you know, it's just reading a little bit about, you know, the importance of, in order to be a friend, to be able to respect yourself and to have self-esteem. And I think that that's absolutely the case. And I didn't have any of that in the past. Now I have it. And, you know, it's a cliche, but it's things become cliches for a reason. You know, to be a friend, to have a friend, you have to be a friend. And I think to be a friend, you have to be a decent person.
Well, the other thing is that going back to what you were saying earlier about loneliness, that there is a certain loneliness in being a thinker, that because by definition you're gaining pleasure from the activity that is internal, unseen by the rest of the world, and there's a natural desire to want to share it, but ultimately it's a lonely thing. So if you can find 1, 2, 3 people who can relate to who you are and the thoughts that you spend your time on, that's all you need. And in terms of surviving something like prison and surviving not having people to share it with, I would think the salvation is that a knowledge, an understanding that you're operating at a different level than people. It doesn't make you better. It just makes you different. You're thinking about things at another level than the average person does. And that requires of you that you belong to a smaller club of people who think like you do. So there's kind of a something gratifying about knowing that you're working on a private project that sets you apart, and it gives you the chance to observe everybody, I think, as somebody removed from the larger crowd, and that is the identity that can feed your sense of confidence that you're doing the right thing in keeping yourself doing what you're doing and on your own path.
I think you're right, but nonetheless, it still does get lonely, and I still do need to have friends in my life and, you know, friends like you. And the thing is when you just said loneliness a few seconds ago, I couldn't believe it, but all of a sudden I felt like a deep sadness come over me just at the thought of the loneliness, because I've sort of experienced it so much in here, especially when changing, because you have to understand, in here, everything's reversed. We're, you know, wrong is right. So, you know, doing the right thing puts you at odds with everybody, with the other inmates, with the staff, and it can be a very disheartening experience. And as human beings, like I said, we need motivation. We need to feel rewards. And the fact that I'm able to do this show is such a huge reward for me. The fact that I have you as a friend is a huge reward. Subby as a friend, my sister. I mean, these things are just so gratifying, and they just really help me to kind of escape that loneliness that I often feel.
Yeah, so I'll just reiterate, I think you need to take that thing that you just described that gives you some salvation. You know, what if you couldn't talk to any of us for a year? You'd have to sit there during that year saying, well, I know eventually I'll be talking to them, and I have to make sure that I'm ready, so I have to keep working.
Yes, that's very true, and that's in a sense what I do during periods of lockdown or when I'm just unable to get through to anybody. It's very difficult, but it's necessary nonetheless, and that's good advice from you, and that's another important thing about having friends, because friends are there for advice when you need it.
So it's great that you brought up the word loneliness, and then good that you acknowledge that when I repeated that word, that it caused a sensation in you, because that's, you know, that's one of the ways our unconscious mind lets us know that that there are things there that need more exploration and more resolution to them. So it's really healthy to get that vibration, and by even just by saying it to the world with all these people you don't know listening, is an act of self-actualization, of reinforcement of your confidence about who you are and the importance of who you are. And that's really cool. You know, grab onto those things whenever you get those internal signals.
Will do. Thank you. That's very, very true and important to hear.
Okay. Anything else? We've got like a minute left. Anything you want to say to close up this conversation?
I would like to just thank Subby for being such a good friend. I'd like to thank Brent for being such a good friend. And I'd like to thank you for being such a good friend. And thank your audience for being willing to listen to me. Appreciate
it. Yeah, and, you know, there are a lot of people, you've heard people call in and speak negatively, not about you because they don't really know you, but wanting to put you in the same pot with all prisoners,
yeah,
and assuming the worst about you.
Yeah.
And I think it's nice that you have the chance to let them hear you talk so maybe they can open their hearts up to you a little bit. But also, there are a lot of people who you don't get to hear from who, you know, I'll occasionally get an email or some kind of quick feedback where people really enjoy listening to our segments on the radio. So you can feel good about that as well.
Real quick, it's funny because those people who talk negatively, speaking of friends, it bothered Subby far more than it bothered me.
Yeah, well, I can see that. He's out there in the world.
Yeah.
You're in private. Okay, so what we're going to do, Michael has to go. We're going to take calls if you have interest in giving us any feedback on the conversation that we've had. Also, I'll remind you to go to prisonermike.com if you'd like to help with a couple dollars for Michael to help pay for his phone calls and whatever else. And then we'll come back and do some more conversation. I'm Todd Feinberg. He's Michael Leibowitz. We'll talk to him again next week in his regular After 6 time. And I'll be back after we get a news update on WTIC.